Hey, yo, what up? This is Mr. Keith Murray, Death Squad, LOD. You're listening to the Odd Man, Down with the King. Odd Man, what's good, baby? Down with the King!
Turn up the bass!
You're listening to Down with the Kings on Maximum FM Hip Hop.
What's going on? It's the Odd Man back with Down with the Kings, and I'm pleased to be joined by a guy that has an incredible vocabulary when it comes to rhyme spitting and getting his rhymes out there. He's been doing it from back in the day, and he's still out there working hard. LOD, Death Squad, I'm talking about Mr. Keith Murray. What's happening, Keith?
Oh, man, that's a wonderful introduction. Good looking, hot, man. Everything going on. You know me, superstar status, zigzagging the globe, baby.
You know, so I've always been a big fan of your energy. You know, when you talk about even your live performances and what you're doing for the people, it's always on point. It's always there, and I've always appreciated what you bring, because you certainly recognize is that you're giving a gift to the people, man.
Well, it's a gift from God, and I just regurgitate it back out to the people, and I receive it well. So I'm pretty blessed and humbled by the whole experience.
You've been on an incredible ride. I mean, you've been in this game for a real, real long time, coming in as a you know, young teenager, if you will, getting into the game, and you're still here now. Curious, if you had an opportunity to talk to your younger self, who was just as you're getting into things, what would you tell him about, you know, the hip hop game and what you got to do for your own longevity?
Well, you just have to be original, and you have to respect the culture, learn about the history of it, so that you can figure out where you come from, so you know where you're going. And integrity is a big thing, and originality. You don't want to sound like nobody else. When I was coming out, I couldn't sound like other people. Now, listen to the radio, you don't know who's who from who sometimes.
Right.
So you got to be original, man.
Did it take you a while to, or rather, how long did it take you to sort of refine your craft to get that original sounding voice that you thought that, yeah, this is what I want to be going forward?
Well, I have an uncle named T-Roy, the original B-Boy. So when I was young, like 8, 9, 10, he was in the hip-hop. I was looking and listening. So around 11, 12, I started writing rhymes. I knew every record on the radio. I knew the artists, Mr. Magic and Red Alert used to spin. I used to tune in when they was there. So I used to listen. I used to listen to my uncle, Grandmaster Flash, the Furious Five, and Run DMC tapes back in the days, and Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick, the Get Fresh crew, the show. So that was my hobby. I used to do that and play basketball and do gymnastics, flip, backflips, and breakdance. And then I used to be into the dress and style of it. So I just seen the culture firsthand. I was that little kid looking at life of Riley, you know what I'm saying? So I was born into it, like heavily drenched in DJing, graffiti writing, and then I started writing rhymes, listening, writing the song, repeating the song, learning the songs word for word. Then I just started coming up with my own rhymes. And then I like education a lot. So I used to be in school, in English class, in science class, and the words would be coming at me, and I'd be in the back of the class writing rhymes, listening to the teacher, and the words would jump at me, and I would put it in the middle of my rhymes, and that's how I came up with the style. Like, Cool Keith Ultramagnetic was a big influence on me, because they had that scientific style with Stetsasonic, the hip-hop band, with the 5% lessons. My uncle, Born True, he introduced me to the game, too. I used to go to Brooklyn from Long Island on the train, and my uncle, Born, used to drive me around to all the projects, and I used to freestyle battle all the rappers out there, go to the parks, get on the mic as a little dude, like, 12, 13 years old, they used to give me the mic. So I was well-versed. The people used to be amazed at how could he be doing this.
Right.
But I started out as a baby doing it.
Right. And you're, by studying it so long, it only makes sense that this is what you're doing, because this is what you, that's what, based on what you've said, that's all you've ever done.
Exactly. The fruit don't fall far from the tree. If you're in the barber shop long enough, you're gonna get a haircut.
Now, I heard a story, and you know that you spit bars at Big Daddy Kane back in the day, like as a young kid.
My uncle was Big Daddy Kane's bodyguard security, so he used to go everywhere with Kane. So me and my cousin Driss used to go to my uncle's house. Kane used to be over there sometimes, or Bone would put us in a car and take us to where Kane would be doing parties out in Brooklyn, like Operation Future or Nassau Coliseum. And we used to be there looking at it. My uncle was the Kane at a birthday party after his concert. And we was at the diner, and everybody was rhyming. And then Uncle Ball was like, "Ah, Keith, go ahead, get in there. It's your turn." He had the camera on. And I walked over from the other end of the table to the other end, and I started rhyming, and Kane rhymed. And Kane was like, "How old are you?" I was like, 16. And then it was like, it wasn't like a battle, but Uncle Bo was trying to make it like a battle, like hype me up, like keep going, get up in there. I had to show and prove.
Now, even back then, were you ready for that moment? Like when you think about that now and all the stuff that you studied and preparation writing that you were doing, and I know that wasn't I'm imagining it was a big deal at that time for you. But were you ready when someone said, "Yo, Kane, you know, Kane is there. Go, Keith, go do what you got to do."
Well, my uncle, I was a tag along. Mm-hmm. I was following my uncle around. He was bodyguarding Kane, so I didn't know he was gonna say, "Go ahead, Keith, get in there." But he always would like edge me on and put people in front of me and like, "Yo, you can't mess with my nephew. Yo, go ahead, Murray, show him something." So I had to spit, and then he was like, "All right, Keith, it's your turn. Go ahead." I had to step up to the plate. My cousins was there. They was like, "You got to get up in there." I was a little shy, hesitant.
Right.
You know, I started reciting. I was well prepared because that's all I did: go to school, play basketball, and write rhymes and memorize them. Study science, do science projects, and then I start venturing outside, hanging out with my crew, LOD. At a young age, then we started getting into the street fights, getting into trouble. Then start selling hand-to-hand drugs, selling crack hand-to-hand, going uptown, rearing up with $40, coming back, cooking up the cocaine, getting the block, selling it, getting the blocks of crack, selling it, and then getting cocaine, cooking it, selling it, and then being in the street, and then the crimes and the petty crimes, and then the jail stuff started.
Right. Well, what did you learn from all that, the street stuff? What did that teach you? Because, I mean, you know, a lot of people, and you probably know some that went through the streets and didn't get out of it, and, you know, either they got caught up in it or, you know, tragedy of some sort. What did you take away from that experience that even helped you now?
Oh, man. I got a lot of friends that didn't make it past the age 20, 25. So I'm no stranger to death. My mother and father passed away. A couple of uncles, a couple of aunts passed away growing up. So I would take that. Life imitates art. Art imitates life. I would take my life and put it into my music and go through the hardship, but still all the time writing rhymes. And then I met Eric Sermon, and then he was able to take all the rhymes I had and break them down and put them to a syncopated beat. So I make hardship records, I make dance records, I make laughter records, I make MC battle records, I make metaphorical records, and I make positive, uplifting, spiritual records. So I got all types of styles within me that just spew out sometimes. Sometimes it may be one song that you hear all of that in one song.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. You talked about Eric Sermon. I know he was instrumental in your career to helping you get to the status that you achieved. Sort of give our listeners an idea of sort of what Eric Sermon meant to you, because he produced your entire first album, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
He produced all my albums.
Right, there we go.
See? And he did all Redman albums, and he did all EPMD albums.
Right.
And
go.
He did Dos Effect singles, and he did K Solo singles. So he changed my life. When he's from Brentwood, Long Island. I'm from Streisand, Long Island, by way of Roosevelt, Long Island, by way of Crown Heights, Brooklyn, by way of South Carolina, Bennettsville. My grandparents, my parents from Bennettsville, South Carolina. So So Eric lived in a town next to me. K Solo lived in my town. I used to see Eric in Paris sometimes driving by, and I'm best friends. My best friend's name is Wink. He's cousins with Eric. So it was either go with my uncle born, go through Kane, or meet up with Eric and get discovered. So Eric used to come to the high school. Then one day, I seen K Solo. We was on the block hustling, and I seen K Solo. I was like, yo, I heard Eric's mother moved into my town, on the outskirts of my town. I said, yo, could you take me to E's house? So K Solo said, yeah, man, meet me over there. So I was on my way over there. I seen him. I passed by. I turned around, went to the car where he was at talking to some girl. And then I followed him to Eric's house, knocked on the door, waited. Eric came to the door. We went to the basement. Eric put on some beats, and I started reciting my rhymes to his beats. And then he was feeling it. And then we just started building from there.
So that was magic, instantaneously, it sounds like, the moment you guys hooked up.
Yeah, it was took me from all my life from Central High School and Roosevelt in Brooklyn, and then bumping into K Solo, because K Solo is a little older than me, but he grew up in my town. And then I asked him to take me to Eric, and then I went with E, and then E was doing EPMD, and then they was on tour, so I went and followed the tour bus and the hoopty that I was driving around in a couple of shows.
Hold on. You're telling me that the tour bus, and you're driving behind the tour bus, following it.
Yeah, and the hoopty that I had, driving behind the tour bus to Connecticut, to Rhode Island, to New Jersey, wherever they was at, I was behind that damn bus, following it.
You're like a stalker.
Word. But Eric, they would get off, pull off to the gas station. Pull over in the gas station, go get some beer. I see Dos Effect. I see Red Man. K Solo. And then E was like, yeah, that's my boy Keith Murray. They get on the tour bus, I get in the hoopty right behind that bus. To the show.
I like that.
I was the biggest groupie, EPMD groupie there was.
I like that. So I mean, here you are in this game as a father. You heard your little girl. I'm guessing that the motivation for you now is very much different than what it was when you first got started.
Yeah, before I just was doing what the culture had guided me to do. It wasn't about money. I was always taken care of. I was school hustling, making money. And then it was making records. I was unconscious. Now it's about making records to have trust funds and estate plans for my daughter. Owning my masters and getting monetary gains for my intellectual property.
Yep. Which is a totally different way of thinking. Like, I mean, when you get started, you just wanted to spit. Now you're thinking about, you know, again, intellectual property. Wow.
Yeah, intellectual monetary gain through intellectual property for college funds.
I want to talk about EPMD is when Eric and Parrish had their difficulties and, you know, went their own separate ways. For those around, how difficult was that period for you guys? Because, you know, you got these two were the figureheads, if you will, and then they've split, and obviously, you know, some went with Eric, some stayed with P. What was that like for you?
Well, I was never part of the hit squad. I was with Eric, and then EPMD had went through their issues. I came around the time they was doing their last album and was going on tour. Then when that issue happened, and then EPMD broke up, Eric went to Atlanta. I was with Eric for 2 years. I never touched the microphone. Then Eric went to Atlanta. And then that happened, and then a year went by. I went back to the block hustling, and I was going to college, my first year of college. Then I had to go do 4 months in Suffolk County Correctional Facility, 4 months for assault as a young little 19-year-old in LOD, the street game. You know what I'm saying? And then when I got out, Eric came back, and then I reconnected with him. I used to call him from jail on the phone in Atlanta. And then he came back, and then I got with him because I was best friends with his cousin. So I never lost track of where he was at because he always knew where to find Aaron. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's the blessing. I was friends with two of his cousins, Wink and Tone Capone. First, I was with Wink. Then I was hanging out with Tone Capone every day. So then I always knew where he was at. Like, he's in Atlanta. Okay, he got a concert here. Okay, he lives over here. Boom. Then I just start going back, knocking on that door. Then we start regrouping again, and he started doing his album, and I came out with the record Hostile with me and him. Did a video, came out, it was a single, and it blew up. Then it took off.
Right,
it took me to drive.
So when you finally got out there, and I mean, you know, most beautifulest thing in the world just blew up. I'm guessing there was a huge sense of satisfaction. To know that, you know, you finally get, thinking back to when you were a young little kid spitting and, you know, studying and rehearsing and rhyming and writing, and now all of a sudden, you know, you've reached this pinnacle. That must have felt good.
Yeah, because like I said, I was with Eric for 2 years before I even touched a microphone. I would go over there to his house in the studio, boom. And then I did a record on his album called Swing It Over Here with Redman, and he put me and Redman together. Mm-hmm. Then he did a solo project, and I did the Hostile record. And then he went to Jive and got me a contract, and we started working on Most Beautiful Thing in the World album. But that line was, the most beautiful thing in this world is my notion for murderous poetry emotion. From Hostile, he took that line and said, Murray, say this to this beat. I couldn't say it. I was in the booth for like a half an hour, like, yo, E, this is not working. The most beautiful thing in the world, just like that. He stopped me. He took the track back and say, I get in you. I didn't know how to make a hook. So he was like, say this part, stop, give him another track. Say that part, stop, give him another track. Say that part. He put it all together. I didn't know what he was doing, and I was like, yo, it's not working, because I used to just rhyme.
Right, right.
I didn't know nothing about no song format until he taught me that.
Anything like that, yeah. Wow.
And I was in there fighting with him, like, yo, I can't say it. It's not working. I can't fix my tongue and my lips and my vocal cords to say it like you want me to. He was like, just say it, and I'll fix it. I was like, I don't know what you're doing right now. My biggest record to date. The record everybody know me for.
That's it.
For tooth and nail in that studio.
Yeah, I can imagine, but it was worth it. It was worth it.
Word. I didn't know what he was doing.
Right. You know. Well, I tell you what, Keith. Let's give our listeners to hear that song that you and Guy fought tooth and nail for and produced, again, one of your biggest records to date. Fans, this is the most beautiful thing. I can't even say it now. The most beautiful thing in the world.
Oh, yeah, because you know what? The most beautifulest is not a word.
That's it.
Just put the EST on it because it was broken English in the way I learned how to speak. I just put it on there, and then the college professor was like, he made it up, but you could do that when you're a poet. I didn't know it was wrong.
Well, that's funny. Well, I'll tell you what, to our listeners, let's check it out. We'll be right back.
Mythological niggas is comical. The astronomical is coming through like the flu bombing you and embalming in your crew too. With the musical, mystical, magical, you know how I do. Remote attack skills and vocabulary too. Coming history in this edition is all brand new. You're through. I'm interplanetarian like Doctor Who. So who? Wanna get chipped on, word is bone. I'm kicking rhymes to the AM vote just wrong. Now Quincy, but I'm back on the block and not selling crack. I'm coming in with the fat, funk flows and tracks. So what you saying, black? With all that yakety yak. My artifacts,
can't be beat with bats. I'm saying, I eat everything up on the menu and bend you and send you swaying to be continued. The most beautiful thing in this world is just like that. In a moment, opponents are suspects. Caught up in the reciprocation, rain and the text. Least I speak, my concept's freak. The itch me, sun cheek, funk figures of speech. Now that shit is in the open, I'm open, poking, scoping. Waiting for the next nigga to get open on and break him down like an organic compound. That's the way of the world as the earth goes round. Now, how the fuck you sound? I represent my clique like a 4 pound. You better pack your leather dope for medication for the shaking meditation from the earth to quaking shit that we be making. I'm a faking, I get down for my crown clown. Shaking the membrane of Encyclopedia Brown. Freaking the funk in any throwdown. Why you sustain the sound of it?
But the most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that. I give it ya. The most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that.
Up off of me and sit your ass down. Now when I'm on the microphone, I roam through zones. But don't be trying this shit at home. No matter what race, creed, color, help my heart. I come sweeter than J. Rue and damage your amateur. That's chronicle facial disorders occur. I'll assassinate your character's caliber. I channel my anger from the double-edged banger and turn it to the microphone strangler. So stop trying to see what your eyes can't follow. Say goodnight to the world and goodbye to the mall. You're raving cuss, so it's a must you get bust. But not to be fucked with, toys ain't us. For eternity, through infinity, I internally get in ya.
The most beautifulest thing in this world is just like that.
What's going on, y'all? The Odd Man here, Down with the Kings, and I'm here with Keith Murray, the most beautifulest thing in the world. I finally got it out, Keith. The most beautifulest thing in the world. Big track for you, big song for you today. You talked about a college professor saying that was not a real word. Did anyone ever want to roll up on you and go, yo, what are you making up words for now? Do you ever hear that from people?
Well, yeah, I did, because you know I made up the word badunkadunk. The record with me, LL Cool J, and Ludacris. It's a big record now. I hear Steve Harvey say it. I hear it's in Wendy's commercials. Missy Elliott, Soulja Boy using the badunkadunk. People don't know Keith Murray made up that word in that record. So I come up, I'm the vocabulary, the most beautifulest vocabulary to make words at. Okay, you going outside?
My baby
is bigger. Okay, go outside, baby.
I love it.
She's very sweet. Let me help you with your coat.
Very sweet little girl. That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
That's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Yeah. And when we talked earlier about just you know, the motivation changing, and you know, as you progress and grow and develop, you know, as a father myself, I mean, it's the same thing. You know, you look at what was important, and it means nothing compared to, you know, what you got now.
Yeah,
for sure. Talk about Redman and that combination, because you guys work so well together. I've seen you perform, and obviously, you know, you've seen videos of you guys. Talk about that magic between you guys, because you guys definitely have it.
Yeah. So Redman was Eric in Paris discovered him in Jersey, and he came to Long Island. And when EPMD broke up, Eric went to Atlanta. Redman went on tour in UK with Hit Squad, so I didn't see them no more. Then when Eric came back, I was around Eric. Then Redman started coming around Eric Sermon, because Eric Sermon was the one supplying the soundtrack to the music, the lyrics. He was doing the beats. So then me and Redman started hanging around each other, getting cool. Eric was doing my album and doing Redman album. And then we just started being cool, so we started getting on each other records, each other albums. And then Eric formed Death Squad, and then we became a crew. It happened organically.
Yeah.
We didn't just come together like, yo, we're going to make a rap group. We
right.
was all gravitating around Eric Sermon. And then it happened by nature that we became Death Squad. We became brothers. Like, we know each other mothers, and they know my grandmother, and the kids know each other. And things of that nature. So we didn't come as a, to say we're going to make a rap group. We was all solo artists under
right.
Eric's wing that formulated organically became Death Squad.
And that's special when you talk about, you know, when you talk about something that's meant to be and that works well, when you have that organic growth and you come together, and I mean, and all on your own rights, you know, incredible solo artists. So to be able to move from that solo tip to on your own and still function, that's special.
Yeah, but that's why it works, because we always were solo artists first, and then the album came organically, and Def Jam wanted us to do it, and then that's why it's only one Death Squad album from 1998. It ain't no more Death Squad albums. Everybody's talking about Death Squad album, but we're going to get back together, but we never intended to do that in the first place.
Gotcha.
So that's why you never see us breaking up or talking foul about each other in the media
right.
or on the internet, because we're brothers. We never was, like, it's 33 1/3% when we did the album. We never was a group in the first place. So it was
right.
nothing to break up.
Mm-hmm. That must have been a great time overall, and the Death Squad was kind of at its pinnacle or its peak because of just... I talked earlier about the magic, right? When you guys kind of came together, it was a magical moment for y'all.
Yeah, but then what happened was I caught the assault charge that I maintain to this day that I didn't do, and it broke up, and I got incarcerated in 1998. So all the laws of nature just stopped it, and I had went into communicado and got confined to a cell. So it just stopped for Keith Murray.
Yeah, that must have been tough.
It was a lesson to be learned, but I grew up in that type of environment, going from the penitentiary to school, in and out of jail, and two of my friends in and out of jail. We grew up in jail, and jail preserved us, so it was just another... Not to sound like, oh, it was tough. Yeah, it was hard times. I didn't want to be there. Nobody in their right mind want to be in jail. But
right.
it was a walk of life for me. Like, yeah, this too shall pass. And
yeah.
what happened, I came out and I got a $2 million deal with Def Jam.
Look at that. Look at that.
$1 million in my personal account. I hired producers, and I gave Eric Sermon the rest of the money to do the budget, and what
mm-hmm.
we didn't spend, it resorted back to our own personal account.
Right. So there you go. There you go. And I think that is a great story or lesson when you're talking to, you know, young kids today. Like, you can say to them, look, man, you know, these are the mistakes I made, but if you persevere and get through it, you know, there's a reward for you.
Yeah, and that's my whole thing. Resilience and perseverance. It gets greater later. So don't think that you can't get through something, because you can.
Right. Wow, that's a great story. You know,
we can get through anything if magic
yeah.
made it.
Yeah, that's it. You got it. What one thing I always wondered about Keith is you went with your name. Why didn't you go with, you know, MC Keith or some other nickname or something? You just went your name. Why did you do that?
Well, my name is Keith Omar Murray Jr. I'm a junior, my father's name. I had a name, my first MC name was MC Do Damage before
okay.
I came out. I was MC
yep.
Do Damage when I had the battle with Big Daddy Kane, the Rhyme Cypher. On Avenue, my nickname was Slash. We had a crew called the Razorcons, followed behind the Decepticons of Brooklyn. We used to carry
right.
razor blades around and drink 40 ounces and smoke Philly blunts and get in the street battles and the street scuffles. But no sobriquet stuck with me but Keith Murray, because my mother used to always call me Keith Murray, or I used to play basketball or soccer a lot. So at school, I was all league. So all you hear was Keith Murray scores, Keith Murray, boy,
right.
Murray, Murray. Then when I'm in jail, I'm in a cell, I'm in court, and they'd be like, Murray, Murray, roll up, Murray, time to go see the judge, Murray, it just
right.
stuck. And they just called me Ma, Ma, Keith Murray, the all-time great.
That's it.
So what better name could I pick but my father's name? I couldn't go say this guy or that guy. I looked up to my father. I looked up to him. So Keith Murray.
That's it. Well, hey, what I think worked well by going with your name is the fact that you talked earlier about being original and finding your own lane. Well, what better way of being original, being yourself, right?
Yeah, I never thought about having a nickname. It's just something I never thought about, except when I was young. The MC name was MC Do Damage, because I do damage to rapping.
Right. That's it. You mentioned razor blades earlier, and I know we spoke before, and you mentioned you talked about having a razor blade in your mouth in the video. Talk about that, man. That's crazy.
We used to carry razor blades in the street, and the only way we could get into the clubs or the cops would frisk us, we were having it in our mouth. They never would check our mouth. So we used to get it discussed. You spit the razor blade out. In jail, you go through the metal, you go to walking around in the yard or something, or the COs would check you. They never check the mouth. So you protect yourself with the razor blade. You spit it out in a second. You defend yourself.
Yeah. Right. The whole video.
But
down,
those
man.
That's my past when I was young. Nowadays,
right.
I got a black cloud over me still. I'm like, I've never done nothing in over 15 years, 20 years, and they still think I'm a violent person. I'm the most approachable, humble person that you would meet on the street. I'm glad you brought that up, because some like promoters be like, well, he attracts the wrong crowd, or would he be a liability? I'm about my business. I'm not no dummy. I don't want nobody to be hurt, and I don't want to hurt nobody, and I don't want to get hurt. So that's all behind me now. All I want to do is make good music, put on a good show, and feed my family. So please, promoters, agents, don't look at me as a troublemaker. I'm a grown man now. I leave that for the young kid.
That's it. You heard it.
I could end it if you started, so don't get me wrong.
Just in case you have to show up, remind them. You're able to.
Yeah.
No doubt. Well, Keith, man, look, I really appreciate you taking some time here and chopping it up like this. And I know our listeners appreciated hearing from the man himself. And one last thing, someone told me a while ago, and I said that if I ever get a chance to talk to you, I'm going to ask you this. But someone told me a while ago that if Keith Murray was ever presented with an opportunity to do a freestyle, he would never back down.
Right.
Is that true?
Why would I? I'm the freestyle all-time great.
All right. So maybe you got a few bars for us. What you got?
Everybody talking but they ain't saying shit. Always advertising about their number one hit. But to be number one, you got to portray ignorance. But to me, that looking sounds stupid. Who you know got the iller killer flow than I do? Elevation of the mind is the only survival. They call it a comeback. It's more like a revival. Keith Murray got more scriptures than the Bible. My repent, intent, focus, tenacious. You hate it, it's just foot soldiers forsaken. I flow with precision to attract new musicians. You listen with the skill air of musicians, rapping, vicious. Living amongst contradictory-ass niggas and friendly, ugly bitches. But it makes no difference for them all in the picture. I flow with wide panoramic vision lenses. The way I do it is counterintuitive. Don't fly in the booth, I need to do it. Mind traveler, chronicler, no flow conjurer. All kind of songs concur. I sell the seven seas and light and continent. I don't know whether to laugh or cry at the peasant. It's all heartfelt, the way I melt in this. 16,000 degrees Celsius. Out of this world, I'm a rocket. Anytime they blog it, marry a hot topic. There's no perfect people. This perfect moment and this here moment feel perfect to you, don't it?
Man, Keith Murray, man. Like you said, this is a revival. This is a comeback. And I appreciate you, my man. I appreciate you, my man. All the best. And tell our listeners what you got on tap or where they can connect with you, because I'm sure undoubtedly that a lot of people would want to. Where can they find you, Keith?
You can find me on Facebook, Keith Murray, Twitter, Keith Murray, Instagram, Keith Murray.
Nice
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And I dress better than any gay man.
I love it. Keep it, man. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking
Hey, I got
man.
One more thing to say.
Yeah, put it out there.
I'm not allowed in Canada. They will not let me in Canada. I have never did nothing in over 15, 20 years.
Wow.
Canada, I love you. I want to come to Canada. Please, everybody hit me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Let's make a petition. Canada, please let Keith Murray in Canada. I've never did nothing in Canada.
No. I remember seeing you up here. I remember vividly.
Last time I did was before I got incarcerated. After I got incarcerated, they would not let me in.
Man, we got to work on that. We got to work. I like that petition idea. Man, we got to put that out there. Put that out there.
I need you, Odd Man. Let's start the petition. Let Keith Murray in Canada.
There we go.
Let's get it, baby.
All right, yo. Take care of yourself.
Odd Man. Thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
And it's odd because only the Odd Man can have an interview with me to get me back in there. It's a conundrum.
I love it. I appreciate you, my man. You take care.
All right, peace.
Peace, yeah.